When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is One Heat Minute.
Drop of a hat, these guys will rock and roll.
What's your name?
Wayne Bro.
Look like gangbangers working the local 7-Eleven. Robbery, homicides, take it.
Give me all you got!
This and
give me all you got!
I do what I do best. I take scores. You do what you do best. I'm trying to stop guys like me.
A podcast dedicated to all 170 minutes of Michael Mann's LA crime opus Heat, 1 minute at a time. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to One Heat Minute. I'm your host, Blake Howard. Yes, this is, of course, the podcast that has already excavated Michael Mann's 1995 crime opus Heat, 1 minute of all 166 pre-credit minutes at a time. We've been back for a brief sojourn, if you like, into the world of literacy, and particularly often male literacy, the world of Heat 2 Book Club, written by Michael Mann and Meg Gardner. We've done six parts of that, and as part of that conversation, I ask every single one of our guests to fantasy cast me this hypothetical Heat 2 movie. We've had a blast so far with two episodes. This is the final one, featuring Justin Lieberman, Niall Schwartz, and my good friend Chris Tapley. All these guys I love dearly. Obviously, Justin Lieberman is an educator and a filmmaker, commercial director, terrific Michael Mann head, former assistant to the great man himself. Niall's author of Off the Map, Freedom and Control in Michael Mann's Public Enemies, a great film critic, though lapsed, but because he's such a towering healthcare professional these days, he's found his calling somewhere else apart from being a cinephile, and recovering journalist and just all-round spotlight-level film and movie journalist, the great Chris Tapley joins me again so they can unpack it. So before we get to the show, huge thank you for all of your support. Thank you for listening and following us along. We are nearing 200 episodes of just our main show, One Heat Minute. When it does get to that 200, I think the show is going to shut its doors. So we've got a few more great bonus episodes to come, but we're edging closer to that very, very soon. So only a few things left, and we've got the whole back catalog. Check it out, oneheatminute.com. Now, without further ado, let's get to our Heat 2 fantasy casting with my fantasy cast of guests, starting with Justin Lieberman.
Tough, man. This has been keeping me up.
All of my prepared and obsessive friends, I asked them this question, and they're like, Blake, it's been keeping me up at night. It's been keeping me up at night. Jesus Christ.
So my one 100% no-brainer is Colin Farrell as Nate.
Wow, as Nate. That's a great one.
Colin Farrell.
I haven't heard that yet.
So one thing is Nate's character, the image of Nate was based off of famed bank robber Eddie Bunker.
Yes.
So if you look up, I won't get into that, but look up Eddie Bunker.
He's in Reservoir Dogs. You can see him in Reservoir Dogs.
He wrote the greatest book called, I keep it by my desk, called No Beast So Fierce that Michael Mann uncredited adapted for Dustin Hoffman into my all-time favorite movie called Straight Time. The design of Nate is based off Eddie Bunker. And if you look at Nate's aesthetic, there is a very thin line between Nate's aesthetic and Colin Farrell's Sonny Crockett's aesthetic.
Of course.
Same hairstyle, same kind of sweaty, unshaven face. So Colin Farrell as Nate, I just think is done. there's so much weight and gravitas. I mean, Nate was always one of my favorite characters, because John Voight was one of the actors that I got to know. He was still is a dear friend of Michael's. He was around a lot. And he was just such a, talk about a guy that was like personally so incredible. And now hearing like his views on politics is so batshit crazy. It's such a complicated relationship, but he was such an incredible actor and such an incredible person. So I always loved Nate. So Colin Farrell is Nate. Okay, so Hannah, these are two actors that I do not particularly like. When I see them in a movie, I do not go out and see them specifically. But you need somebody that goes big, that could live as loud as Pacino lived inside of Hannah. And the person I kept coming back to was Jared Leto.
Never confuse shit with chocolate. They may look the same, but the taste, very different. Trust me, I know.
Oh my God.
I don't love him as an actor, but just think about, I wonder what he could do with it. I wonder what he could do with it. He's getting of age. I wonder if he settles into that a little bit and just becomes this character, if he could do it. Again, I don't know if I'm rushing out to see that movie.
That would be a tough hang for me. I'm not a huge fan of him as a performer, but all I immediately thought of was I just got his like reflexive House of Gucci. I just got that stupid.
Well, totally. And you need somebody, you know, I think somebody like John Bernthal is a little too masculine, a little too Herculean in his performance and the way he carries himself. But that vibe, another person I kept coming back to where I was like, why the fuck not? Fucking give it to Leo.
Yeah.
Just give it to Leo. Let Leo fucking be a badass LAPD cop.
Or
like, what are we doing Leo, here? Why are we overthinking this?
Give Leo De Niro.
Yeah. Like, now, here's my question for you is, do we need that backstory in the film? Could the film just be that part six?
Wow.
I don't know if we need the Mexico stuff. I got to be in a film.
He's going to, because that's an action centerpiece. That's like the.
I know, but doesn't involve Hannah.
But that's why it's so important to have Neil. Like he's going to have Neil. He's going to have Chris. It's going to have Wardell. It's going to be like his version of kind of 310 to Yuma or My Darling Clementine. Yeah. Like it's like a proper Western shootout. He's going to have a shootout in the canyon.
I see it. I get hung up on Hannah, and he's so absent from that chapter, from that section, that's a big chunk of a movie that doesn't have you know, arguably the star of it. Because at the end of the movie, Neo wasn't there, obviously.
I think they're going to have to mash 2 and 4 together in some way, right? Like have them happening at the same time, because then they ultimately climax with Hannah finding Wardell, and then Wardell screwing up the plan. So I think that that's
important. I kind of thought it'd be just one, all of one, with him doing the work. But so Leo, give Leo, Neil, or Hannah, either one. But let's just give it to Leo. Let's not overthink it. And then, you know, Chris Chehurlis, you know, you've said it before, but Val was such a specific thing. He was so beautiful and masculine and strong and smart and cunning. You know, I don't know him. I know him from Everybody Wants Him and Maverick, certainly, but I think maybe Glenn Powell is carrying that torch a little bit. I don't know.
See, I am WandaFin, and I'd like to say hello.
Say hello,
fan. To the black, to the white, the red, and the brown, the purple, and yellow.
Okay. I got a bang, bang. A boogie to the boogie, say don't jump the boogie to the bang, bang, boogie. Let's rock. You don't stop. Rock the rhythm that'll make your body rock.
Now, so far you've heard my voice, but I brought two friends along.
Who are they?
And next on the mic is my man Rope. Come on, Rope, yeah. Sing that song.
Check it out, I'm a CAS and the OVA, and the rest is FLY. You see, I go by the code of the doctor of the mix, and these reasons I'll tell you why. You see, I'm 6'1" and I'm tons of fun, and I dress to a T. You see, I got more clothes than Muhammad Ali, and I dress so viciously. I got bodyguards, I got two big cars, it definitely ain't the way.
Tell me, Dale.
I got a Lincoln Continental and a sunroof Cadillac. So after school, I take a dip in a pool, which is really on the wall. I got a color TV so I can see the Knicks playing basketball.
The Glenn Powell hive is rising up, Justin, and I don't disagree. I think he's certainly beautiful, and he's definitely committed. And I feel like him working with Michael Mann, you know, the thing about Glenn Powell, he's got such a great relationship with Cruise, because Cruise is so invested in his career as an actor, and is like, he really, you know, Cruise has taken this beautiful mentoring relationship seemingly with everyone in the cast of Top Gun Maverick, because of how, you know, they're like a family, and he's taking a big interest in Miles and taking a huge interest in Glenn Powell. And they're like pushing him to be the kind of, to start falling in line. And you can imagine that if he gets a call to say, should I audition for, you know, for Heat 2, Tom Cruise is going to go and work with Michael Mann. Of course, that's, if you want my career, you go play the bad guy. Well, who is essentially the bad guy in a Michael Mann movie? Like, it just feels like it's predestined. And I don't think that you're wrong.
You know, one of the things that, and not to end on a sour note, but I was lamenting as I was doing this mental exercise, was just how few stars we have right now. You know, the list was pretty short, you know, the people that I was really going through. And, you know, is there a world where Downey Jr. could be Hannah? You know, I don't know. Is there a Ruffalo could be Hannah? Like, maybe, but they, you know, you're talking about fucking filling Al Pacino's shoes. That's why, again, I'm not a Jared Leto fan, but you need somebody that understands how big of a character that is. And I just don't see those actors out there the way that I wish I did, you know?
You have to think that, you know, you have to do what De Niro did with Godfather 2, and he makes it he's not doing a Brando impression. He's doing Robert De Niro's Vito Corleone, which has the anxiety of influence there, but he transcends it. And that's more difficult because that was only a 2-year difference, 1972 and 74. And this is, you know, almost 30 years later. And this is a classic movie. And I guess it's like the equivalent of you're playing Bogart or something.
That's my example to everyone when people, like, particularly lunatic Star Wars fans, they're like, how could we recast? I'm like, you think it was easy for Robert De Niro to play Brando? Do you think that was easy in the same universe 2 years after one of the most influential films had ever been made in the United States and the world? You think it was easy? I mean, I know that Robert De Niro is, that's ultimately one of the reasons that makes him one of the most special performers that has ever walked the face of the earth. But he did it. It can be done.
Not to be a Star Wars nerd here, but I think Ewan McGregor is a good example of someone who may have done it too.
I mean, yeah,
he's the best thing about the prequels.
Absolutely. And so Ewan doing that is totally fine. I just remember when they were talking about Carrie Fisher and things being ruined, and you know, I was always like, with the greatest respect, and this is kind of us, maybe being a bit more cinephiles. It's like, Postcards from the Edge, which is an adaptation of a Carrie Fisher book, Meryl Streep plays her. I'm like, did someone pick the phone up to Meryl and say, hey, do you want to play General Leia? Like, she would have done it.
Yeah.
Why ruin it with really tacky shitbag CGI? You know, like, it can be done. We don't, and also, there's no way in hell these octogenarian guys with their octogenarian director can come back and be these characters again. It's not possible.
No, and I say this as a, you know, a big Irishman fan, you know, but there it kind of works because dying and the pull to the ground is part of the text as far as I think.
Yes.
But what we talked about Colin Farrell earlier, Colin Farrell is someone who I think could do that. Colin Farrell, when he played Sonny Crockett, was not playing Don Johnson. He was playing a character that you can compare to Hannah or Macaulay, but he was playing Colin Farrell's Sonny Crockett in Michael Mann's Miami Vice circa 2006, and it was perfect. I think, you know, Will Smith playing Muhammad Ali, that is one of the biggest challenges you could think of, and I, you know, because he's playing a guy who's larger than life,
playing the icon. I think it's his best performance, hands down.
Yeah, Will Smith totally pulls it off. And, you know, in retrospect, I would have given him all the awards and stuff. I know that when it came out, people were kind of lukewarm on the film, but time has borne out that
Ali actually fucking rules. Rules top to bottom. Top to bottom. Yeah. Everyone in the movie is great. He's phenomenal. It makes his other performances. It's like King Richard, with the greatest respect, that performance doesn't shine his shoes as Ali.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the one.
I was also thinking of like Ethan Hawke as Nate, or Russell Crowe as Nate.
Mm.
Adam Driver as Kelso. I mean, there are guys like, you know, Jeremy Strong and John Bernthal, even though I think he and Michael Mann offended him during the Public Enemies casting sessions, I guess. Oscar Isaac, Stephen Graham, who's worked with Mann, who played Babyface Nelson, Bobby Cannavale. Chris, you could say, okay, Robert Pattinson.
Oh, Robert Pattinson for Chris.
Just asking you a question. Why you gotta be such a fucking little prick all the time, man?
Look at you, you're drunk as shit. Now you wanna get real with me?
Don't fucking flatter yourself, bro. I'm not trying to get real with you. You know what? I'm fucking real. I'm trying to talk to you, all right? Go fuck yourself, man. I think you're better than me.
I am better than you.
You're an ignorant fuck, bro. No one's better than any next man, all right? You don't know me from Adam.
The second you got here, went to the booze and you got fucked up, but that's fine. That's just who you are. You're a fuck up. I don't give a shit.
You shouldn't give a shit. Who gives a shit? I definitely don't give a shit.
Look, losers like you are incapable of taking care of themselves. You're either leeching off mommy or leeching off welfare or living off the government in jail. Right. That's you.
You don't know the first thing about me.
Alden Ehrenreich.
Oh, I know Alden. That's the very, very Harrison Ford looking man.
Alden Ehrenreich is someone who should have become a movie star. He was terrific in Coppola's Tetro. He was amazing in the Coen Brothers' Hail Caesar. I thought he was very good in Warren Beatty's Rules Don't Apply, a film which I am a stan, unfortunately. And, you know, he played Han Solo, of course, but he never really, you know, he didn't have the hit to make all, you know, to make him a movie star, but I think he should be, and I would put him in contention. The third person is more problematic because he's problematic. But I was thinking of him because of Tokyo Vice, and that's Ansel Elgort.
Yes.
And I would not have said that before. You know, I actually thought he was fine in West Side Story. But when I saw Tokyo Vice, I was kind of taken aback by how impressive he was. And that's an example of, you know, I think someone working with, you know, when I think about the pilot to Tokyo Vice, someone working with a good director, and you're able to mold a specific character. And that's, you know, think about, not to compare Ansel Elgort to Day-Lewis, but when Daniel Day-Lewis played Hawkeye, remember, he was, you know, the twit in Room with a View, and, you know, a debonair surgeon in Unbearable Lightness of Being, and the gay punk in My Beautiful Laundrette, and then, of course, a guy with cerebral palsy, Christy Brown, in My Left Foot. And then Last of the Mohicans, he's playing the epitome of husky masculinity, you know, very... It came out of nowhere. So I would submit those three guys in my kind of wish casting for Chris Chehurlis. I know a lot of people have said Hemsworth. I'm not sold on that. And I know he, you know, he's playing a hacker and so on and so forth, but and I mean, there's a lot of, you could think, you're thinking about Daniel Kaluuya as, say, Drucker, for example. Drucker is obviously a character who man's thinking a lot about. And I think at the end, he sets it up so that, you know, Drucker is the one who says about Chris, I'm going to get you. But we'll see, or we won't see. This is enough.
Well, it's in that spirit. I'm going to start saying it, people aren't going to hear this until the show's recorded, but this is the last dance that I have with my favorite text. This is the end of One Heat Minute, not productions, because we're going to move on to other things, but I'm officially retiring my spoken opinion about my favorite thing.
That's sad, but it necessary.
Yeah, I think this is my last dance. It means more to me than any other film ever, mainly because of the people like you in my life that I have now because of this project, this campfire, and we'll continue to build other campfires. But I think I never want my opinion of my favorite thing to become work. I don't even want to feel like it is. And I'll say as well, and I'll sort of reinforce it the more that I talk to new guests, if there is a Heat 2, I won't continue the show. I'm not going to do the movie. I'm not going to do a minute of the movie. It's not, no, even knowing Michael Mann, probably talk about it, but I'm not talking about Heat. I may not even talk about Heat 2. I may have to just abandon it altogether. I don't know yet, but it just feels like after talking about this book and gathering the crew that we're going to talk about with the book, and feels like the right time. It feels like we've been to this church, and the shrine of One Heat Minute exists.
Yeah,
and it feels like it's time.
You got to let go, like, you know, Charlene and Chris. I mean, you just kind of.
Yeah, I've got to fold. It's time to fold. Yeah. It's time to get away. Because otherwise, if I just keep going back, making time, I'm going to end up dead in that airport. And look, that might be good too. But
yeah, your ground zero, your terminal destination is LAX. I see it now. But you, yeah. I mean, you've opened up so many other texts in the interim, whether it's, you know, Zodiac or Miami Vice or President's Men and so on and so forth, and now Master and Commander. So there's a lot of, don't ever quit doing what you're doing, but you don't have to do, you can turn down
no
turn I, on the
That's what I would say. Well, firstly, thank you for that love, those kind words. I'm not going to stop doing what we're doing. We've got other projects coming down the pipe. I'm excited about Master and Commander. To talk to a few more people, to gather some more info on that, and to work really hard to make that happen. And it's going to happen. And, you know, I've been sitting on this chest of great interviews with great people that I have been holding off for one Russell Crowe, and I'm now not waiting anymore. It's happening with or without Captain Jack. And maybe it would be better without him. I'm not going to stop doing what I'm doing, because this is my way that I engage with, you know, movie culture. This is how I do it. But I see myself, I want to keep this most sacred thing sacred. Now it's been done. It's there. It exists.
Well, I'm blessed to have been a part of it, I think. And
I am blessed that you were a part of it. Thank you so much. It's been fun talking to you about this book. It is certainly a page turner, and now I'm diving into it. And there are a few people who are like, you're going to do a page at a time? And those people are insane.
Oh my God. Are you crazy?
Those people are insane. I'm like, no, I need to live. I need to have a life. I can't. No, it's not happening. But I'm looking forward to seeing if Michael Mann can make this happen. And I think if anyone's will can do it, it's him. And, you know, what do they say when you're getting older? It's like those people who retire, you die. And I feel like Michael Mann is that kind of entity.
I think that's what keeps a lot of these guys young, whether it's him or Scorsese. Certainly, I think it's kept, you know, Coppola going. You know,
Clint Eastwood is still making. Clint Eastwood's still having threesomes in movies. He's like 90. Yeah.
He's doing the Transcendental Meditation. You know, David Lynch and Clint and Scorsese does it too, I guess. But, you know, the thing is that this was a number one New York Times bestseller. And once upon a time in movie land, that would mean that you have a movie deal, especially for a first-time author.
Yeah.
Thinking of whether it's Stephen King or Tom Clancy, Hunt for Red October, or John Grisham with The Firm, and then The Pelican Brief and The Client, and so on and so forth, and Robert James Waller, The Bridges of Madison County. You know, you write a best-selling book, that means that, yeah, let's sign the deal. And I'm not sure. I think that the reason why Mann started Michael Mann Books was so he could be in the kind of Michael Tolkien, Robert Altman, the player sense, a player, because it's a means to, you know, arouse audience and studio interest, and whether that's Heat 2 or Hunting LaRue or whatever Don Winslow is doing for him. And I'm happy that this, and I was surprised that it was a number one bestseller. And maybe if anything, that's the means by which he'll get something made, because I mean, he's had so many films in development that just
you'll never
green lit.
No one will ever be able to convince me that this wasn't one of the most ingenious ways to prove a concept.
Yeah.
He has been, you know, right around the time that we even started One Heat Minute, Mann was already developing Heat 2 and was probably saying, this movie has resonance, this movie has impact, this movie deserves to have a sequel, you know, a legacy sequel. And probably at the time he was developing it was almost close enough that he was maybe thinking about having, you know, Pacino and as the older, you know, some of these actors portray their older selves. And, you know, all this time he's sort of been saying it. And then it was like, well, I'm going to prove to you that this text has resonance. And how do you do that? Well, rather than writing a script, you get a crime writer to help you structurally develop this, as you, I think, so perfectly articulated it, the sequel, prequel, appendices, the best appendix ever. And you go, I'm going to put it out there and millions of people are going to buy a copy.
Yeah.
And it's going to be the number one book of the year as far as sales. And he was right. And it was almost like going, so here's the book. I basically have a script. I'm sure there's a script. I'm sure he has a script that has like been working in parallel with this thing. all the research for the book is like pre-production, and he would have like mountains of dossiers and things of projects that didn't actually go together. And so I feel like it's that this is the thing that has always shocked me, is like on Netflix, they're paying hundreds of millions of dollars for some Russo Brothers garbage. You can't throw Michael Mann 100 mil to just do whatever he wants for a couple of years.
Yeah.
Black Hat was in the top 10 on Netflix when it was released on Netflix for like 3 months. It's the worst man movie. It's still a good movie, but it's the worst of all the man movies. Like, so yeah, I just, it's really fascinating to me that it's taken this long, but I'm glad that finally we're here.
And then the studio head in me thinks, you know, God damn it, Michael, why did you have to set this in the year 2000? Cause it's already a period piece. I'm thinking of like the Godfather show, you know, that the Offer. I just listen to you and Burns like an old episode talking about, which, and The Offer is like an embarrassing, ridiculous, but really watchable show. Yeah. And I had some fun watching it. And by the way, I think Matthew Good is someone that, the guy who plays Robert Evans,
yeah,
would be, put him in the mix for somebody. I don't know, Chris or Vince. I don't know. He's fantastic in The Offer. But I'm just, again, I think, you know, film directing is hard. But as the character that Dustin Hoffman plays, who's sort of based on Robert Evans, and Wag the Dog points out, you know, no one talks about producing, working out schedules and the logistics and salaries and casting and catering and all that other kind of stuff. That's when I think about whatever movie Heat 2 is going would be, it's
Yeah, it's a headache. And also, you know, even on the most micro scale that I can understand it, knowing podcasts, like booking guests, getting things prepared, you know, yeah, making sure that you can develop something, like producing what we produce. It's like the logistics is half the battle. Planning, scheduling, making sure that you can get availabilities, cross time zones, you know, making sure, yeah, you have access to materials. You know, it's going to be a behemoth, but I think it's possible.
You multiply that by the Michael Mann factor, where you have like helicopters everywhere, and
it's going to be nuts. It's going to be insane. But I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, I wish him the very best, and I, at the very least, you know, I'm happy that he's still going. Because I don't know, our dads are dying, and I'm not really sure how I feel about the next generation, at least in terms of what they're able to do.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I'll start with Neil, and he's probably the one I feel strongest about. People might think this isn't great because you get into ages and things like that, but De Niro was 50 when they made Heat. So you got to go back, what?
Someone has to play 7 years earlier. And that 7 years earlier than 50. So, yeah, 40s, between 40 and 50.
To me, it's the guy who already played Robert De Niro once this year in The Batman. Colin Farrell, man. It's got to be Colin Farrell. I think he's got all the heart that's necessary for this role, for that moment, those moments with Gabriella and her mom and just all of that. But he's also just, he's got the look. You know, throw that beauty mark on him.
I would love to see Farrell back. You know how much we get excited when Michael Mann uses someone again, the Barry Chewbacca Henleys, the John Ortizes. I'm so excited about the prospect of Colin Farrell, because I agree. There's literally nothing Colin Farrell can't do, and him working with Mann again, like, he knows the man. He's already delivered like an iconic performance in a Mann movie, and he already had the pressure of like following Don Johnson. So I don't disagree. I think that's I can see Colin Farrell picking up either of those guys, but I think he's absolutely could do a Neil. Absolutely.
Yeah. Only then do we call in the dope, and somebody from your side can go look at the product.
The money's right here, so send somebody over.
Can't find the shooter.
Where's Yuro?
Right here. And I brought your friend. Oye, mano, she mine now. Jesus gave her to me to ask questions and find out interesting things. We a couple now. After work, she and me go catch a movie and grab a bite. When I get tired, I throw her away. Her leg in one place, her head someplace else. You guys ever see that? Anyway, she here now to make sure everything go right.
Still no shooter.
My guy, show him the money. I don't want him.
Why? What difference does it make, Sonny?
Listen to me, asshole! I do not want that motherfucker near me! You wanna see your dope? You send Isabella. Or it travels.
Hannah's hard for some reason.
So hard.
To nail down. I didn't do this by going to the Michael Mann well of actors he's worked with, but I did feel something around Adrian Brody.
Mm.
Not Adrian Brody. Sorry, I landed on Adrian Brody ultimately, but I was thinking Adam Driver, for a while, but I landed on Adrian Brody. So basically, one of those two, I think, could be interesting for Hannah.
I heard you have trouble. It's going to be to see me.
You just came from Parasite.
You know Paris?
I left Paris in a cattle truck.
Chris.
Hairless Hemsworth.
Hemsworth? You think Hemsworth?
Yeah. I'm staying in the man, again, just by pure coincidence, but I'm staying in the man well here. Yeah, I mean, he can do it. He's got the look. I don't know how massive he is right now for the Hulk Hogan shit he was going to do. And certainly he was huge in Thor.
But he's a lean guy.
Trim down.
Yeah, he's like he works so hard to stay big. He works hard to stay big. But if that guy just like stayed in his beautiful palatial Bondi seaside mansion and just surfed and ran and just did his, you know, fitness app, you know, he'd be fine. He could totally do it. Yeah, he's
the hair, you know, he can
Do the long hair, he can do the short hair, he's always going to look hot. Yeah, he needs Chris has to be hot. So I don't disagree. And it's a simpler accent for him to do LA. He's 40s. It's like 42. Yeah.
He's 39.
39.
I just want to see how much that's going to get me in trouble when I give my pick for Charlene. Okay, yeah. Dicey. But also my pick for Charlene is more age appropriate for her than Chris is age appropriate for, cuz he's got to play somebody who's playing him young
and then older. Yeah.
So like it works. Charlene was hard, man. I kind of ended up on Hailee Steinfeld.
Yeah.
She's beautiful. She kind of strikes an Ashley Judd visage in a way.
Yes.
And I think she's a great actress. So I think that I would love to see somebody like her work with Michael Mann. So
I want to see Hailee Steinfeld do lots of Ashley Judd kind of performances. Because now she's like a pop star as well. But like she's amazing, like True Grit. Come on, she's
fantastic.
She's so good.
Midland and 10 for Ordinary.
We got most of ours out early. Sold to the Woodson Brothers in Little Rock for 11 cents.
Then I suggest you take the balance of it to the Woodson Brothers.
We took the balance to Woodson. We got 10 and a half.
Why'd you come here to tell me this?
Oh, I thought we might shop around up here next year, but I guess we're doing all right in Little Rock. I'm Maddie Ross, daughter of Frank Ross.
In a movie that has Matt Damon's best performance with all these guys, Barry Pepper, Josh Brolin, like, and of course, Jeff Bridges. She's so formidable. Tough.
She's unflappable. Yeah.
Tough.
She'd be great. And that's what you got to be, is tough to play this character.
Yeah.
You know, like that, even who she is. Casals, it's hard. I don't know a lot of Native American actors. I went with Tatanka Means. Certainly would be interesting to have
another Means, you know, in
the man. Well, yeah. I mean, and also carrying on a Wes Studi role, just having Means and Studi kind of.
Yeah.
Together in this kind of character would be kind of neat. So yeah, Elisa was Gabriella's mother. Eva Mendez.
Yeah, of course. That's the first thing I thought of. She doesn't work a lot, and she's a person who's like, oh, I'm frustrated that there's not any like really cool. There's not some great roles, and I'm like, get Eva Mendez into a Michael Mann movie and get her career going.
Role.
Yeah, it's a good role. Really good.
Knows the score. You know. The stuff with her and her daughter would be fantastic.
Oh, the house scene, that one house scene where she protects her. Insane.
Yeah.
Insane.
Gabriella, Jenna Ortega seems just made for this.
Yeah. 100%.
Really good in Wednesday, by the way. Kelso. So fun how much he's used in this story. Fabric of everything he becomes.
This is the only thing that I have to say. Why can't we just, I'll accept one digitally de-aged person. Can we digitally de-age Tom Noonan? He's sitting down. Like, he's just got to give him a colored beard, shave his head. Let's keep him. Let's keep him, Chris.
But then you wouldn't be able to cast this fantastic actor that I'm going to bring up.
Oh, please.
Michael Shannon.
Mm. Yes.
You can see it.
But, you know, this is the thing about Michael Shannon. I think Michael Shannon could play Nate as well. Michael Shannon could play Kelso or Nate. He's fantastic. Because, you know, he'd be unflappable. Haywire. I love Michael Shannon. That's great. I love that.
I want a little haywire on Nate. I went with Taylor Kitsch.
You know what?
I feel like he could do that and be interesting.
Taylor Kitsch is a guy that I've also been thinking about, Chris, because he's got some miles on him. He's got some miles. He's maybe not as formidable as a Hemsworth as Chris, but I believe that's the thing, that even when he was like a young man in Friday Night Lights, he just had this world weariness that I think is so special in the Chris character, thinking about this story specifically. But yeah, he could do that. He'd have a ball doing that. Get some of that Matthew McConaughey True Detective. Get those hairstylists and beautiful makeup artists, the unbelievable. Get some of those. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And as far as carrying somebody over, I wouldn't even de-age him. Bring Tom Sizemore back, man. Fuck it. This dude was just born with a 5 o'clock shadow. So like, screw it. Just like, bring him back. I never came up with anybody for Cerrito. I don't know. I'm sure there's plenty of options.
What about Wardell?
Yeah.
What about Wardell?
Again, I don't know who this guy is. I just have that picture in my head. There's not even a race ascribed to this guy, by the way, is there?
No, there's one person who is in the man.
I mean, I'll tell you who I landed on. Stephen Dorff.
Yeah, love Dorff. He's terrific.
Yeah. But what do you think?
I was thinking, just because of his size, and I know that the age might be screwy, I think you're more spot on with ages, but he's already played a man character and a man bad guy. He played Sadak in Black Hat. Yorick Vageningen. I'm going to pronounce that wrong. I know I butchered that. But Dragon Tattoo Guy. I just kept thinking, and he's in a terrific Emilio Estevez movie called The Way. He's big and burly, you know. Wayne Grove is smaller. Like, I just like the idea when I was picturing Waddell, the one difference that I had in my mind that he was big, that he was, and this guy in a room with like small bossing around small lackeys and prostitutes and stuff, and being like really malicious and dark, and, you know, home invading people's houses and just being this towering figure. I just kept thinking of Yorick because he's so, he's got a sweetness, which, you know, tweaks to that whole screw loose thing, but he can get as dark as they get, and I think he's terrific.
Well, only thing about him is I don't get chilly vibes from Wardell. You know, there's something chilly and, you know, fucking Dutch about the guy you're talking about, and Wardell is just like a cokehead. Like, there's just a whole other energy that's why I kind of landed on a Dorff type, stringy hair sort of guy. Something like that.
I love it.
But again, who knows? Who knows what this will be? I mean, I'd like to just, that's actually a question I would ask Michael Mann straight up. Like, what do you picture? Don't tell me an actor or anything. Just like, because he never gets really descriptive about him, does he? It's like one of the few.
He
kind of shies away from that.
He doesn't. And I think in all the characters, he's reticent to go like too deep. He doesn't go too deep and like, this is exactly, you know, facial features, this and that. A bit of a mystery as to who he could be.
He does have some great physical descriptions in the book. There was one more I wrote down here on 427. He's talking about that fence that they go to, you know, and he's talking about like the nicotine tinged air and stuff like that. And he says his yellow Guayabera blouses over a bowling ball stomach. I'm like, got it. Know exactly what you're talking about. He talks about his hair and how it just for fences. That cracked me up. But yeah, I mean, Wardell, you could go a million different ways. But my number one, like, gotta have it is Colin Farrell.
Yeah. He can do it.
And he's having his moment again. And, you know, he's going to get this nomination for Banshees of Inisherin, which is fantastic, by the way. You know, he had his big Batman moment, and it's going to be in that Batman series, I think. So, not that Colin Farrell was in any, you know, danger of slipping off the mat, but like, he's coming back stronger now lately. So I think he'd be a big get for something like this.
He'd be a behemoth. And can I just say, God, I would love the press tour the chatter around it, I would love it because everyone would be asking about Miami Vice too. When's my...
Yeah. There you go.
That's all.
Absolutely. Like,
if there's anything that I want is just the people going, all right, now you've done this. Miami Vice 2. When's it going to happen, Michael? When's it
gonna He's happen? Like, let me get through this sequel first. Jesus.
Man, that'll be a casting announcement. That'd mm-hmm. be a day. Because he's finished filming Ferrari. It's coming out. It's happening. Mm-hmm. And then?
He better whip this together, man. He's not getting younger.
No. That's the thing. And this will be a, like, I mean, they shot the original Heat in 6 months, but you imagine that this will probably be a, you know, 6 to 8 month shoot to get everything done.
He's got
to
go far more places than just LA for this one. So
yeah, he's got to be on the Mexicali,
like a black hat shoot.
Yeah. Mexicali border. And then he's got to go across. Yeah. It's an ambitious thing. And then they've got to do the like bounce arounds to do those interstitials and find those places. Yeah. It's a big undertaking.
Bigger art department this time too, because he's going to have to do period. It's all period ultimately, really. I mean, because nothing's taking place now. So,
well, yeah, especially like even if you go down to Ciudad del Este, you've got to get contemporary mobile phones out of people's hands, and you got to try and have some semblance of the same cars, and you've got to have that sort of stuff. And I think it's even harder when you go to like Southeast Asian countries because they look, you know, 5 years in a Southeast Asian booming economy, the city mm-hmm. looks drastically different. You've got to go to places that look mm-hmm. completely different to like, or like, when was this built? Okay, it was built in '90s. Oh, yep, it still exists. Okay, we're going to shoot here. I can't shoot this skyline because that wasn't there. And you know that he's going to ask those questions. Was that skyline mm-hmm. there in 95? Or sorry, was that skyline there in the 2000? No. Okay, fine.
Yep.
Oh,
I'm ready, man. It better be the next thing he does. I don't want to hear any other bullshit.
Yeah, I mean, he's executive producing Tokyo Vice 2, so that's about the only other thing that's on his plate. He doesn't have to direct that, though.
I don't even think that's on his plate at this point.
No.
I think his name is on it.
His name's on it, yeah. It's done. It's kind of like the, you know, those directors that come in and direct the first episode of a series and they just bounce. But he was very much in the development of that. But I think now it's like, no, I've set the template. Go off and do it.
Absolutely.
Well,
who would produce? Been working with John Lesher lately. I think Lesher's doing Ferrari.
Yeah, I think so. It's whoever the producer is, they have to be someone who is an absolute beast at scheduling because they're going to have, it's going to be really hard to decide whether they're shooting all the more contemporary stuff first and then going back. And then prepping all, like, he's going to want weapons training. He's going to want all that stuff.
Over this is going to be, like, the most prestigious gig out there when they start putting this thing together. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
I'm not going to give a shit about any other movie. Like, it's going to be the first time in a long time that I've just been, like, on tenterhooks, like, what's the next announcement? What's the, you know? And people are just going to be dying to be a part of it. To get Dante to shoot it again?
I hope so. But he's using Eric Messerschmidt for this one.
Yeah.
I hope he uses Dante. Dante Spinotti and LA Light. Very special. I hope so.
I don't know who else he could get that would, you know. I mean, I don't know.
Well,
I wouldn't stunt it there, though. I wouldn't go for, like, I was to work with Lubezki again or something, because that gets to be a little, guys like you and me, we see a Spinotti movie, we're like, that's Dante Spinotti movie, but not most people. I think there's something about like a Lubezki movie where it's so clearly an aesthetic of that cinematographer. And I don't want that on a movie like this. No. You know what I mean? Something that feels like an override almost. And even the stuff they did together on Ali, it doesn't really feel like a Lubezki movie per se, because they were getting so just wacky with what they were doing. You know, in a good way. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know what their relationship's like. You might know better than me on that.
Well, I think the only thing I could intuit is that I think Dante would have liked to work on Ferrari, because Dante's a Ferrari guy. You know, he's like, I used to get the Ferrari magazines when I was a kid. So the fact that he's using Eric Messerschmidt, it might just be because of digital photography. Who knows? Messerschmidt obviously is... worked with demanding filmmakers. like David Fincher. So,
to say the least, yeah.
To say the least, yeah. And making a period movie. He's great.
He's the shit. He's good. You know, kind of a great guy to come in after Chenoweth and Fincher. So,
yeah, he's.
But yeah, we'll see, man. I'll be following. I'll be looking for every little morsel.
Ditto. I and it is going to fuel the movie making internet, and whether Twitter still exists, whatever the next social media platform that everyone jumps on, like those casting announcements dropping on places are going to be lit. They are going to be crazy.
Totally.
That concludes this final Fantasy Cast episode of One Heat Minute. Thank you so much to my amazing guests, Justin Lieberman, Noel Schwartz, and of course, Chris Tapley. They were amazing. If you want to see more about what we're doing, check out oneheatminute.com for everything on One Heat Minute Productions, including our upcoming shows, Podcaster and Commander, Pod Thomas Anderson, and more. Of course, Miami Nice is back this year. The Blues Brothers is back with our Imprint Companion podcast, talking all things imprint and physical media. If you want to reach out to us, mail@oneheatminute.com. If you want to support us, patreon.com/oneheatminute, or just hit the Patreon link at the bottom of our homepage on our website. You can check that out, help us out, and you can join our Discord and chat to us all the time. This is the final One Heat Minute for a little while, but we will catch you on another episode of One Heat Minute around the corner.
You know, and it feels like such a 20th century movie. It feels like something David Lean would have done or tried to do when he still had that kind of currency. And even then, he might not have succeeded.
It's incredible because, like, if you don't have time to watch all five seasons of Lost, you can just watch Fearless.
Not a week goes by that I don't think of the ending of Gallipoli. It's left a mark. A year of living dangerously. You know, and then something like Last Wave, even, that's so deeply embedded with the land and the story of the land, the story of place. You know, I don't know that I'd seen very many movies at that point in my life that had such a down ending, and they had such a, you know, sort of strong sense of folklore attached to it as that. And something always so poetic and lyrical about Peter Weir's work.
Gallipoli was the first movie that ever traumatized me, and I don't think I ever really recovered from it. And I'm still upset that they played it in school. Like, I don't think it's actually possible to make an... They say it's not possible to make an anti-war movie, but I think Peter Weir pulled it off.
Yes.
Because no one watches that movie then thinks, I want to go to war.
Peter Weir is the greatest director that Australia has ever produced. Like, bar none, hands down. Like, no one else is even in the room.
I think you have covered some really titanic filmmakers and some really titanic films so far, but I truly think what makes Peter Weir special and what makes you doing this one special is we don't talk about Peter Weir that way, and we should. Peter Weir is one of those guys who I don't get why he isn't a bigger name, why he isn't more in that rarefied air,
yes.
Because I think film for film, he's one of our very best filmmakers. He has brought his A game repeatedly to many properties. There are films of his that I hold very dear. Fearless, The Mosquito Coast. I will fight somebody if they talk bad about The Mosquito Coast. It's, man, I love that movie. But in general, I just think he is a special filmmaker, a smart, lyrical, hallucinatory filmmaker. He's a very dreamy filmmaker, and I don't think he gets his due.
You know, Master and Commander is one of my all-time favorite movies. You know, it's easily one of the best movies of the last 20 years. It's, there's a grand scale. There's a historical backdrop to it. But at the same time, there's such an intimacy in the relationships.
Which I think is not just a great film and one of the last great epics in the truest sense. I think is actually kind of a sliding doors change point moment. In cinema history. I think 2003, when that comes along and it is an old-fashioned, you know, we don't make them like that anymore type film. I think if Master and Commander spawns a franchise at that point, the entire cinema landscape globally is completely different.
That's the movie that I wanted to see 10 of those, you know. Yeah, I know they're big fans of Fast and Furious and everything, and God bless you, but Master and Commander should have been.
It's one of those things. Again, I'm not a seafaring man, sir. But there is a sense of authenticity. There's a sense of really watching a genuine dedication to recreating history unfold on a big screen in front of you that can't help but inspire just genuine admiration and awe.
If you're going to pick a film where he really brings every one of his skills to the table, it's Master and Commander. I think you picked the right one, man.
Yeah, very excited to see what you pull out of this, Blake.
That's right. Our next series is Peter Weir and Russell Crowe's Master and Commander. The series is called Podcaster and Commander.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.